Divergent Paths with Dan Dunford. The Metropolitan Area's leading podcast for really awesome interviews with musicians that actually comes out every week. I have no way of verifying any of that, but I'm going to just assume that it's true until someone tells me otherwise. All those NPR music podcasts don't come out every week, so I'm pretty confident in my analysis. That was a good start. Keep it going. Thanks for listening. Had a little meeting with the producer this morning, Mr. Trevor New, to discuss some cool things we're thinking about in the upcoming months. You know, as a freelance musician, the summer months can, not necessarily always, but can be a little bit slower than the rest of the year, which, you know, as long as you have money saved, is not necessarily a bad thing. Hopefully that means some more, well, that will mean more good interviews, of course, but maybe some other interesting things. I don't know, maybe looking at doing some live tapings with people in an audience. Who knows? Maybe people would show up to that. I sure hope so. That'd be cool. Maybe some ideas for sponsoring. I don't know. Hey, if you're listening and you have an idea like that, let me know. My email is divergentpathspod@gmail.com, or, you know, you can message people on Facebook through their fan pages. Also, if you don't like me on Facebook, you should do that. Anyway, that's enough begging. This week's guest is Misha Piatigorsky. I met him through a good friend of mine, Natalie Barrett-Moss, who is a wonderful violinist, who plays for Misha in a group called the Sketchy Orchestra. That's orchestra spelled with a K, not a C-H. So she put me in contact with Misha, and I went over to his place this past week and sat down and had a really interesting conversation. He's a really fascinating guy. He's a pianist, he's a composer, he's a band leader. He won the 2004 Thelonious Monk Composers Competition, which, you know, you probably already know is a really big deal. He's done a number of really cool things, and one of his big projects right now is the Sketchy Orchestra, which is a, you know, a jazz, pop, and hip-hop infused group with a full string section, trumpet, saxophone, bass, drums, and of course piano, with Misha playing that, and been playing around a lot recently. This interview is kind of in support of a couple shows they have coming up. One is this Friday, April 29th, at Zinc Bar, which is down on West 3rd Street. Really fun venue. They're doing sets at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. if you can go. So check that out. And another show on May 16th at Le Poisson Rouge, which is down on Bleecker Street. And of course, I'll put all this information up on Facebook and such. But yeah, I really enjoyed my talk with Misha. He's a really interesting guy. And, you know, really, you know, it's funny sometimes with some of these interviews, like there's a lot of back and forth, and sometimes I need to, you know, draw some things out of people. Misha, not the case. He was ready to go, and we talked, you know, everything went very smoothly, very quickly, very efficiently. I barely even needed to edit anything out of this week, which is, you know, which is a little bit unusual, but, you know, both ways are fun. Let's just put it that way. Whether a lot needs to be edited out or whether or not, you know, I have a good time either way. Anyway, hope you enjoy our interview. There will be two pieces on this episode, one before the interview and one after the interview. The first track, which will be before the interview, is from kind of the precursor, which we talk about in the interview, to the Sketchy Orchestra, Misha's group Sketchy Black Dog, using their version of David Bowie's Space Oddity, which is beautiful, and I love that song. And after the interview will be a live living room style recording of Sketchy Orchestra playing Misha's song Every Time, featuring the wonderful singer Emily Braden, who we also talk about in the interview. So, enjoy the show, and I hope you'll subscribe and share it around, and hopefully come back next week, and the week after, so on and so forth, etc. All right. Bye.
Some acoustic treatment, just like move some stuff around in my room, I could just like do all my recordings there, and it would be great because it's a good size room. Anyway, so we're here because of Sketchy Orchestra, and I know a few people who play with you, have played with you, or play with you regularly. And that's how long has that been going on?
Are we recording?
Yeah.
Oh,
we're good.
I wasn't sure. How long has that been going on? Well, it's an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm.
Sketchy Orchestra started about 6 years ago. As first, the name of the band was Paris Troika, and it was just a trio.
Mm-hmm.
And then made some changes, and I brought in a string trio, and just a violin, viola, and cello. And slowly, the band started to be called Sketchy or Sketchy Black Dog.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why it was Sketchy Black Dog is my partner at the time, Chris Wabich, drummer. Came up with the group originally, the concept of it originally was to play classic rock songs. That's what it was. And it all came about because I did a concert once in Russia about 6-7 years ago. On a tour, I had a 13 concert grueling tour with another jazz pianist from Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a famous dude. And we toured Philharmonic halls. Not bad at all.
No,
but it was a tough gig. Like 13 concerts. Like some nights we would play the Philharmonic Hall, And then instead of going to a hotel room, we'd get on the train.
Yeah.
To go to the next town. You know, you sleep in the train. And so that was rough. Anyway, we played one concert in a big city called Yekaterinburg. They have a phenomenal Philharmonic Hall. And his manager works out of Yekaterinburg. And I think I finished the first half of the concert playing solo piano, and I played, I think, Imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And the audience, it was, you know, packed auditorium. And the audience went nuts. Standing ovation and the whole thing. And so then he ran up to me during the break, and he said, you know, would you be able to bring a trio playing this kind of music? I said, yeah, of course. And so that's how that all started. And I put together a trio, and I started writing arrangements for classic rock tunes randomly. Like, what else would I like to play? What other kind of songs would I like to do? And so it evolved into, like, one of the first treatments I did was Bowie's tune, Space Oddity, because I've always really loved that song.
Yeah.
But I did something with all this stuff. Like, in Space Oddity, basically, starts by Space Oddity, but then it goes into like a crazy vamp in 7, which kind of has its own melody. It has nothing to do with Bowie, but it just made sense for me.
Right.
So, and Sketchy Black Dog, don't mind the pigeons. Oh, okay. They're my friends.
I was wondering what it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my girlfriend has proposed that I don't kill them yet. She's a humanitarian. But imagine if I was recording a singer in here and that was happening. Anyway, and what happened was, and then I wrote a few other songs. I mashed together a few songs and I put together, Black Dog, Led Zeppelin. I kind of mashed that up with Helter Skelter.
Right.
And it kind of made sense. You know, it was really cool. And my partner, Chris Wabich, the drummer, he said, that's one Sketchy Black Dog.
Yeah.
And so that became the name of that song.
Mm-hmm.
So when we actually changed the name of the band, it became Sketchy Black Dog. So it all kind of made sense. And so in its originality, the majority of what we played were these classic rock tunes. You know, we played Purple Haze, and I did a treatment on I put together Hey Joe with Eleanor Rigby, and he again came up with a brilliant name. He called it Ella Joey.
Right.
You know, so that was Ella Joey. So so that's what was happening at first, and then I hated all of my writing for the string trio, and I realized I need to redo it all, and I really need a string quartet because I'm missing one very important note. And so I sat down once and I redid everything and I made it a string quartet. And that band had quite a run. We had different shows all over the world. We'd do New York, then we'd do a lot of shows in LA. We would have a different string quartet wherever we went, and sometimes also a different bass player depending on where we were traveling. We did a German tour, we did a, you know, Canadian tour, blah blah blah, Russian tour, and so that kind of took a rest for a little while after it. You know, every band sometimes kind of burns out. you run around the world, you make no money, and at some point you're like, okay, time to regroup. And so I realized that I have a lot of this beautiful music, and I started adding a lot of my own compositions to the repertoire. So I stopped making arrangements of classic rock tunes, and I just started writing more and more of my music.
Right.
And then I got asked, we played in Kazan once with Sketchy Black Dog, and instead of having a string quartet, we ended up playing with a chamber string orchestra, like 24 pieces with a conductor, and we did all of my arrangements, but we did it with a chamber orchestra, and that blew my mind, the sound of that
possibilities.
Oh my god, it crushed me, actually. It crushed me inside. I was a broken man. And the conductor, about a year later, called me up and he said, I would like to commission you, if you would like to write a brand new concert for us, all new music, for your trio and the chamber orchestra. And we would like to not pay you for it.
Well, that seems
about right. How about that? Are you game? I'm like, absolutely. So I spent about a half a year writing new music for that. I reused a few compositions of mine for that concert, but predominantly I wrote a bunch of new stuff. And one of the big pieces I wrote was called the Brighton Suite, and that was like a 3-movement piece that lasts about, you know, 25 minutes, half an hour, depending on what happens inside, depending on how long the solos go on for. Anyway,
like Brighton as in Brighton Beach, or Brighton as in Brighton your day?
That's an enigmatic question that I'd like to not answer. That's what it was. That's what it's called, the Brighton Suite, in 3 movements. So, and then back in New York, I realized and my partner in LA sort of he and I split up, and he continued his life in LA, and I continued my life here. And I realized after a little bit of time that I want to put together, and I want to continue playing my music again. And so I put together an ensemble of about 10 string players, and to try to emulate this chamber orchestra with the trio. And we did a gig. I think we did Rockwood, and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it, and I was like, "Wow, this is, I need to continue doing this." And then the next gig we did, which was I think it was in October, we played Zinc Bar. I got the idea of, let's really just blow this up all the way. I mean, if we're already not making any money because the band is big, let's just make it a full circus. And I decided to incorporate, to ask my dear friend, one of my favorite singers in the world, Emily Braden, to join us. And she's an incredible woman. I produced her debut album, and she's really just a force of nature. And I said, come and I'll find some room for you here. And I started thinking about where she could sing, and I also added 2 horns, a trumpet player and a sax player. Tim Greenblatt is a trumpet player who's played with me for the past like 7 years in my septet, my quintet, whatever I do. So I added him, and that particular gig we had Giorgi Contentino, dear friend of mine from Brazil, play with us. And I had even more strings. I had like 15 string players. It was ridiculous, but it was awesome. It was such the Sketchy Orchestra really became the Sketchy Orchestra. And this is how the name came about. Was that summer about a year ago when I started putting together this idea of bringing back. I didn't want to call it Sketchy Black Dog because it was no longer Sketchy Black Dog.
Right.
It was a completely different
setup.
Yeah, but everyone associated the word sketchy with what I was doing, you know? And so I thought about it for a while and had a meeting with one of my dear friends who was actually the violinist who played all the string parts on the Sketchy Black Dog album, Carmel Raz. And I sat with her, and I love her to death, and she's a brilliant, brilliant woman, and has always helped me, you know, with writing my bios and concepts and everything else. And I said, what do you think about if I do this group and I call it the Sketchy Orchestra? You know, and she said, I think it's perfect. I think it makes perfect sense.
You've still got the brand intact.
Exactly. Now it has just a big and an open end in terms of what it could be. Because I'm not locked into what it is yet. Not locked into, is it 10-piece strings? Preferably, I'd like to have 24 strings. You know, I'd like to have 4 first violins and 4 second violins and four cellos and four violas. That would be, wait, that would be 16. Let me, no, I would like to have six. Six and six, that would be 12. And, no, the best would be eight and eight. Eight first violins, eight second violins, then four violas and four cellos. I mean, that would be a phenomenal set. Because I think that's the way we did it in Russia the first time I played. And that was such a complete sound.
But of course, that rules out playing at Zinc Bar ever again. The stage is just not big enough.
Well, it's funny. We basically just take over the half of the audience. And it makes sense. So she absolutely agreed with me. She said, "Let's do, I think that's a brilliant idea. I think you should definitely go with it." And I decided to put a K instead of a CH, make it a little bit more European. That show went quite well, and I really enjoyed what happened to it. And I started right away thinking about what to write, and I started writing more music because of who's in it now. And I was like, I gotta write a hit for Emily now to really be featured. And I just wrote that song called Every Time. That is now we made a really cool music video out of it. You can check it out, called Every Time, sketchy orchestra. It's in our site. So I made that happen, and then our subsequent performance was again Zinc Bar, and it was like in December around Christmas time. And a few weeks beforehand, I ran into a dear friend of mine, who's a rapper and spoken word artist. His name is Raj, and I've had Raj on many things for that I've done in the past many years. Predominantly, he was on Low Talk, on one of my albums called Aya. And Low Talk was actually the composition that I won the Thelonious Monk Composer's competition with. Anyway, he's a dear friend and a really just a character. He is a singer, he's a rapper, spoken word artist. He's just a vibe. That's what he is. And he's been out of town. He was living in a different state, or I can't remember where he was, but he was not in New York for a while and I haven't seen him. And it was just one of those things. I said, "Raj, come and play with the Sketchy Orchestra. I think it's going to be an amazing combination." And he did, and it was wonderful. And the way he and Emily blended together was amazing for me. You know, young, still like not really developed, but it was like a rough rock,
right?
But starting to chisel at it, I started seeing the possibilities of where it's going to go. So the project continues, and I started after Raj did the show with us. I really liked what was happening with it, and I liked the vibe that he brought to it. And I wrote a song for him that was going to be like a big hit for him,
right?
Called Lady Maybe. And so little by little, that's what started happening. The group is morphing into something which I don't know yet,
right,
where it's going to go. And part of that is very exciting, you know. Part of that is super super cool to see what's happening. And you know, we have a show coming up. We have two shows coming up. One on April 29th at Zinc Bar, and then one larger show at LPR, Le Poisson Rouge, on May 16th. And for the May 16th show, I've decided to include two different acts to join us on stage. And I have no idea what it's going to go like. We have this one rapper, his name is Chazmir. I thought about what he's going to do on what song. He's going to really throw down some serious rap on probably Blackfire. And then this other gentleman, his name is Anthony Flamia, and he's more of a singer, and he does a big thing with a loop machine where he loops his voice and does a thing. So I'm very excited. I've never performed with both of them, and I'm very excited to see how I can incorporate them in the set and what we can do with it. I think the thing with Flam is going to be more of a just a open solo between him and me. And maybe I'll have, you know, Joel Fromm on saxophone join us on it. just to see where it's going to go. And because everything is very scripted in, right. in the music. Because it, what the violins are playing, the arrangements are very, very scripted. So it's kind of cool to have this duality of something that's super scripted and something that's completely like, oh my God, what the hell is going to happen now?
Right.
You know?
So the kind of things you're talking about is just like taking multitude of threads, whether those are musical genres or what you just mentioned, you know, the contrast between something that's like playing down written charts combined with a more open-ended, like you said, who knows what's going to happen kind of feel.
Right.
You're taking all these threads and combining them into like one voice. Mm-hmm. One voice with many facets. And now, is that something that you've done for your entire career or had an interest in doing? Or, you know, like what... Or is this just out of like, let's get everyone...
No, well, yes and no. I mean, I've had different... I mean, my big thing has been always to perform with my trio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always a very open-ended thing. When I play with the trio, I take, you know, the information that the trio has is... no more than just some changes that the right. bass player has. You know, in a lead sheet, either we'll play a standard or we'll play one of my tunes, but everything is always very, like, let's see where the hell this is going to go. You know, I don't necessarily have anything written out for the drummer or anything like that. And I always, you know, I it's all about basically entertaining myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to be bored. So I want it to be... wherever it's going to go, it's going to go. And it all depends on who are the musicians that I'm playing with. There are certain musicians, certain trios that I play with that just have that insane ability. Like if I'm playing with Rudy Royston on drums or Ari Honig on drums, we just have... I know that I can go absolutely anywhere. Mm-hmm. And at the drop of a hat, I can go into something else. Or I can completely change tempos, or I can... do absolutely anything, and they're there before I'm even thinking about it.
Yeah,
because they're so in tune with me. You know, like a Danton Bowler, one of my, you know, playing bass with me. He knows my shit.
Yeah,
he knows the possibilities that are going to, or if I just start playing some crazy 2-3 or 4, you know, chord vamp, you know, Danton will catch it. At least on a second time around, or maybe third.
Yeah, I just saw Rudy playing with Dave Douglas
mm-hmm.
just a few weeks ago, and it was something else.
Yeah, Rudy's a monster. We're right now trying to find some a time for us to record a trio album, but. I've performed a lot with my septet where mm-hmm. I have music written out, but it's always, you know, it's even the through composed compositions, things are written out, but there's always the big open solo sections.
Yeah.
When you're writing for strings, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
When you have an orchestra, everything has to be still have big open mm-hmm. solo sections, which are for me.
Yeah,
you know, or for the bass player, or you know, some of them my violinists improvise,
right.
But it's still much more scripted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really the pieces have a very clear curve of where they start, where they go, and you know, there mm-hmm. are open sections that are repeats. You know, but everything has a continuous line to it. Where it's, you know, where you can really come in as not knowing anything and just read the part and get through it.
So what kind of things are we talking about when, you know, you're writing all these pieces for string orchestra and the other instrumentalists? I mean, you've been writing your own music for what, how long? Like,
I started writing music when I was, you know, a late teenager.
Right, so we're talking about you've been writing For a long time.
For a long time. I'm not 24. I'm not even 25.
Me neither. It's cool. But at this point,
as they say, one day when my youth will pass away, what will they say about me? Yeah.
Yeah. But when you're writing for this specific ensemble, like, what kind of things are you drawing on with this in mind? Obviously, you have established your own personal style throughout your career. I mean, does this kind of, you know, you're playing, and obviously you're playing along, you're playing and you're soloing, you're doing, you know, doing your very personal things, but has writing for this ensemble, you know, changed how you approach things, or have you how have you adapted?
Well,
for the specific group,
that's a great question. Writing always stems from knowing who I'm writing for.
Mm.
For instance, you know, Kenny Grahowski plays drums in the band now, and I have him in mind when I'm writing things. I know who are the different violinists in my band now and cellists. You know, I have a lot of cello features in my writing. You know, I've had Agnes Nagy in my band playing cello from the inception, from the first time I ever had a sketchy orchestra, a sketchy Black Dog performance.
Yeah,
she was the cellist, and so I also know what she's able to do. You know, she's a phenomenal classical player. So I've always had sort of these more cadenza-ish parts for her to play that are more intricate and that are very soloistic, like, because I know she's gonna rock it, and she always does.
You don't have to just throw her pads and let
no, she does not need whole notes, and God forbid I give her whole notes, she gets completely lost in counting them. She's like, I don't know.
She should try being a trombone player.
Oh yeah. Well, funny. So knowing who you're, and now with having particular singers in the band, like having Emily involved or having Raj involved, you know, I'm also writing for them. Like, what do I want to hear them do?
Right.
Also, I've, through the process of all the writing that I've done, I see what works and what doesn't. You know, I'm able to go back and, like, there's an arrangement that I have of one of my tunes called Dream from Moscow. Mm-hmm. And I don't even do it anymore with this band. We did it once, and it was too difficult. Everything just fell apart all the time. And I realized that that's also something you have to take into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it worked in Russia, in Kazan, because the chamber orchestra, that's their job. They go and they rehearse every day with a conductor. So when I came a few days before the concert and we rehearsed and we played that piece, I was like, oh my God, it sounds so good! Because that's what they do. They get together for 6 hours a day and they're paid to do that. And they have a conductor who is, you know, who's a bad mofo. He's very strict. He's also a violinist. And it was totally together, you know. And in New York, as you know, it's all, everything is a time restraint.
Yeah.
Okay, you have 10 people. You have 10 string players. How much time can you get out of them? I mean, Jesus Christ, they're only getting 14 cents for the gig. So, you know, everything starts to come, the writing starts, you have to start compromising on the writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can do something that's crazy hard and crazy intricate, but am I going to have 14 hours to, wow, the number 14 keeps being revisited. Are we going to have 14 hours to rehearse this?
Right.
Or do we only have 2 hours to rehearse for this entire concert?
Mm-hmm.
So that's when you start editing yourself.
Yeah, that's it's interesting that you bring that up, because like you said, I mean, there's you have a very limited amount of time to rehearse, if any, sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I mean, if you're playing a show that you've played a bunch of times before, then maybe rehearsal is not as necessary. But With all of us, you know, you might have people who are doing 16 other things that week. They're probably not going to spend, you know, 4 hours looking at it ahead of time. And
yeah,
while that's ideal, it's something that you can't necessarily
no
get upset about when you, if you understand.
Well,
you can't. Okay, let me rephrase that. You can get upset about it.
You actually can. I mean, I have, you know, and I have some real monsters in the band.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I have one section of one song. I have a song called Blackfire, which Emily sings, which I actually wrote originally for Emily on her debut album. And it's kind of a beautiful Balkan type, crazy Arabic, Jewish kind of a in melody, and it goes into some different places, and then he gets into this big vamp, which is a really kind of a vamp that was after her album that I came up with afterwards, and during this vamp is where I have a sort of a tutti string solo written out,
right?
You know, it's it's incredible how much, and it's really cool. Like it goes by. There's a whole thing that happens on it. Basically, it's first violin, second violin playing together, and they're playing the whole thing together. But it's like in thirds, and it's just some beautiful harmonies. But it's a let's say it's an 8-bar form, that solo section, and it's about 4 choruses.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about 32 bars. Something like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's 3 choruses. Maybe it's 24 bars. It doesn't matter. Let's say 32 bars. And it's 32 bars that that really need to be looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that you really need to commit to learning it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not like if you're a killer jazz player, which most violinists are not, and you're really used to playing upbeats, and you really understand ba 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 ga ga do bo bo ba. If you understand that, then it's easy.
Right.
But if you don't, it's murder. It's really murder. And I've spent time with some of my violinists helping them to go through that solo.
Yeah, it's I mean, if you're talking about brass players, there's a huge divide between classical brass playing and
of course
jazz brass playing. And some classical guys just can't do it. I mean, I just know me personally. It took me, when I started doing big bands more regularly, it took me like a couple months before, you know, because I have all my other stuff, but it took me a couple months before I could just go in and sit down and be like, okay, these rhythms aren't going to throw me because
you understand
because I understand what's going on. Yeah. You know? And plus I listen to that stuff. That's a big part of my listening too.
Well, that's the big thing. So, you know, and so I have I don't have too many sections like that in too much of my music because I know that that's the stuff that is going to be train wrecked.
Well, I mean, it's, you're also with a string orchestra, like it's kind of a different vibe.
Right.
You know, I mean.
When it's done right.
It's killer.
It's killing.
Well, here's my response to that, you know, where there's the tradition in Eastern Europe of improvisation on a melody. Like I've seen performances of this where the string players are playing the same melody at the same time, but they're improvising differently over the same melody.
Uh-huh.
You could just say it's like that, and they're all improvising differently over the same melody that you've written, and that'll clear everything up.
Yeah, right. Let's try that. Wow. But the original point that I was trying to make is that even some of the guys who are really killing players, who think that they can read anything and rock it, if they don't look at it, and if I've experienced this, they come and they fall, they trip all over themselves over a section like that. So it's one of those things. It's like if you want to commit to doing something like that, you're going to have to look at some parts and you're going to have to put some time in. I mean, if I had to do that, if I was a violinist or if I had to play that part on the piano, I would not come to a rehearsal without really spending some time on it because I would trip all over myself. And mostly because I'm not a really good sight reader. But I would have to really like, like okay, let me shed this. Let me figure this one out, you know.
And there's... So what do you, I mean, there's obviously a balance between like doing charts, things that you really want to do. Have you taken some of the more intricate things that you've written and simplified them to facilitate the shorter prep time?
I have a little bit. I've taken a few things which, you know, sometimes I go back to my writing. I'm like, this is ridiculous. You don't really need this. Come on. Get over yourself, Piatigorsky. And then you just kind of make it simple. And the funny thing is a lot of times if you make something simpler, it's just better.
Well,
it just comes out better.
I always think that I talk about this with people a lot. Like, I think I listen to pop music, and, you know, wherever you stand on, like, quality of specific things,
right.
There's a real power in a simple hook.
Oh yeah,
you know,
of
like
course.
It's.
Oh yeah,
you know,
it goes without saying.
You can make something really flashy and really intricate, and that's fine, and it can be great. But also, you can really drop like a sledgehammer with like a really, really good, simple.
Of course.
You know, simple line.
And I'm all about that. And the thing is, when I say more intricate stuff, it's never in the melodies.
Mm-hmm.
I pride myself on melodies and on hooks, and I keep my melodies very straightforward and very straight up. But there are some places where you just want that little
funky
bit of thing, especially with strings. You know,
yeah.
Like you want like we were doing this new song called you know, Somewhere in Between, and it's a really simple melody. It's killing. And I wrote the arrangement that the strings only come in on the second time around, sort of in the middle of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wanted this kind of like the swell, the yeah, mm-hmm. you know, on one. And that thing takes, it has to be written. You can't just put one note. It's got to be written out in a way that people know when to start coming in,
right.
And doing the fast notes. And how does it come out? And how many notes does it take between you get from fourth beat to the first beat?
And know? which of those small notes are you like throwing your fingers at in between?
Basically, you know. So, I mean, strings are strings have an ability to do effects that are amazing,
mm-hmm.
but they're also a little bit tricky,
mm-hmm.
and it's also tricky. How are you going to write them?
Right,
you know. So I'm learning all that. You know, I'm learning also about bowings right now and how people. And there's always negotiation during
yeah.
and it's wonderful seeing that.
Yeah,
you know, we'll have a rehearsal and one violinist will be like, "How do you? I think we should bow it like this," and I love it when any of my string players take charge, and they're like, "Yes, I think this is the way it needs to be done," or you know, sometimes when a more seasoned player plays in the band, people will kind of like. Look to him or her about mm-hmm. how would you like what do you think would be the best way to finger this, and it's always about fingering and bowings,
right?
And if you're not a violinist, it's so hard to know about that stuff.
You
think like one way and then
you think that you kind of get how it works, and
but you really
and
don't.
It's like there
no
just no,
you really don't. Yeah. and it's actually, and for me it's been a wonderful learning experience, and I actually love rehearsals for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
I love it when we stop and then the string section tries to figure out a spot, like how they want to play it and how they want to phrase it, and a lot of times they'll play it for me like, do you want it like this or do you want it like that. And it'll be such a different sound.
Yeah.
Same exact notes, but just the phrasing,
mm-hmm.
depending on how you bow, depending on
if how you bow, what string it's on,
what bow a string, and whether or not you bound, you tie three notes or two notes or four notes. Did you up bow? Do you do down bow? It's just it's really unbelievable how much information there is, and how different. It ends up sounding, and where the bow is it by the frog, or is it more longer?
Is it
you know,
a, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And every violinist has a different sound too, and has a different approach, and sometimes even has a different idea of mm-hmm. where the note is. like in terms of pitch. Mm-hmm. Some hear it a little higher, some hear it a little bit lower. It's really unbelievable. I think that's what makes it such a phenomenal instrument. Is that there is negotiation. What about the second violins or violas who have to match whatever the top violin is playing and find their note? How does it tune? And finding that place where it really vibrates, resonates, as opposed to, ugh, the hell is that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. And then, God forbid, your piano is out of tune and nothing sounds good.
And, I mean, come on, that's... Some places that's the case more often than not.
Right. In that respect, horns are so much easier.
Yes.
Oh my god. It's actually funny. I mean, I would, I would do multiple rehearsals with strings and get pretty much every time frustrated by it. And then I'll go do a gig with, you know, a septet or something. When there's never ever a rehearsal, mm-hmm. guys just read down the stuff. And everything sounds so good. You're like, wow, why is everything so killing? Why does everyone understand exactly how to phrase this?
Yeah. Well, there's only...
You know.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's a good fight. It's a fight that we keep fighting for some reason.
Well, yeah. It's a fight that never really ends, depending on who you have. We've kind of talked about, like, the process of writing for these specific things, but more like musical content wise, like where are you pulling just for melodies, for rhythms, for like where are you pulling all of this from to, you know, this is kind of a unique, you know, you talk about writing for a septet or for a trio. I mean, those are, you know, even with,
it's all the same thing.
I mean,
it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't?
No. You're just writing. I mean, the process is getting an idea, a spark, about what is the next thing I want to write.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is that? What is the root of what I'm going to do? What, you know? So it, how you orchestrate it? If you orchestrate it for strings or for horns or just for the trio, that doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
The first idea is, what kind of song do you want to write? I mean, a lot of times when I'm writing, when I sit down and have a desire to write something, if I don't have an idea of what I want to write yet, the first question comes to me is, what is it that I want to write? Do I want to write, what kind of a song? Do I want to write a lush ballad? Do I want to write something like a hip-hop thing with a particular groove? I think of groove mm-hmm. right away. Like, what kind of thing do I want to hear? You know, like when I wrote the song for Emily, Every Time, I wanted to do like a three, like ding 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 ding, like that kind of a vibe. That's the vibe that I was. That's the first thing that came to my mind, and then I started playing with some different harmonies and some ideas, and it just, the song came to me. So for me, that's usually the process: is I think about what kind of thing do I want to do. Or I may be inspired by something. I might hear something that inspires me and inspires me to go, man, I want to write something like that. And I do. And I'll go ahead and write something like that. That not necessarily sounds like it, but the inspiration came from that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the process that I'm inside of. So, like, I have a lot of repertoire right now for Sketchy Orchestra. But, so I don't feel the need to write anything right now in particular until I feel the need to write something.
It might change tomorrow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if somebody came to me and said, I want to do a brand new record for this, and I just want to do this, what, do you have any ideas? I'll sit down and write an entire record in mm-hmm. one day or 2 days, because the idea is very clear. Oh, this person needs a repertoire. Good. Let's go. Let's do this. You know, what kind of things would they need? What kind of songs, or what kind of, depending on if it's a singer or an instrumentalist. So, so I just kind of just go for the ride from that perspective. Mm-hmm. When I need to do something new, like when I run and write something new, I sit down and do it. And then until I have to, then there's no need.
Right.
I have a shit ton of of things written.
Yeah.
So
plenty of other things to do.
Yeah. So that's how that process works for me.
So I mean, so Sketchy Orchestra is obviously not the only thing percolating at any one time. What else are you, do you work on from day to day?
Well, I mean, in terms of my musical projects, that's one of the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the between that and my trio
mm-hmm.
is really what I'm focusing on. I'm actually now focusing on some solo piano stuff because I've been engaged to play at the end of June. I'm playing a jazz festival in Canada, and I'm doing it as a solo performance. So that has kicked my butt to sit down and figure out, all right, what am I going to play now? How do I do this on my own? Because I play solo rarely,
mm-hmm.
and it's very challenging to play solo piano, especially when you don't do it as your predominant thing.
Right.
I love playing with people. That's what I adore. I adore the energy that creates that's created when you're sharing the stage with many other musicians. So that for me right now is a challenge, and it's a challenge that I put on myself, which I'm crazy about.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, that's right now the focus is trio, solo, and Sketchy. For now.
For now. Same thing, it could change tomorrow.
Well, if it needs to change tomorrow, it will.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's talk a little specifically about the next two shows you have coming up with Sketchy. One's at Zinc.
Mm-hmm.
That's next Friday.
Next Friday.
What day is it? Is today Thursday?
Today is Thursday.
Awesome. I don't have weekends. It just all blends together. And then the following one was May
16th. Which is a Monday evening.
And is it also at Zinc?
No. LPR.
LPR, yes.
The Poisson Rouge.
You mentioned that. So you have these two shows coming up, and so this one next Friday is you'll be having the orchestra, and then you'll have the... I'm going to blank on their names because you said them already and I can't remember what they are. Rapper.
Oh, yes.
Electronic thing.
For the Poisson Rouge.
Oh, that's for okay, that's for Poisson Rouge.
Yeah. I'm going to have, for Le Poisson Rouge, we're going to have a guest star appearance by... we still have Emily and mm-hmm. Raj, but we're going to have a guest appearance by Kashmir.
Right.
Kashmir. Sorry, Chasmir. We're gonna get there. We're almost there. Chasmir, because his name is Chaz. The looper's name is Flam. It's right. Anthony Flamia.
How are you? Like, you talked a little bit about what he does. But how do you integrate that into, his looping and his...
Well, I think...
Singing this into is the...
That's a very good question. Funny you should ask. I've been asking that myself. I actually have to get together with him. I think one of the things that I like to try...
Or what excites you about that possibility?
Well, I've seen what he does online where mm-hmm. he kind of starts, and then loops and mm-hmm. He does some kind of a vocal thing on top of that, loops that, and then does another vocal thing on top of that. I'm always a big fan of those things. I mean, that all stems from like Bobby McFerrin.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite recordings in the world is the duo between concerts of Bobby McFerrin and Chick Corea.
Right.
It's like one of the greatest things in the world. So Bobby, of course, doesn't use a looper, but I was thinking of trying something like that with Flam.
Mm-hmm.
Letting him start with some kind of a thing, and maybe I can join him on the piano on something,
mm-hmm.
and just to see where we can take it as improvisers. I think I'm going to probably ask him to come to my house and try something.
Right.
To see where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a variable that is unknown, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always excited about doing something that I don't know what it's going to be.
Right.
You know, actually every album I feel like I ever produced and recorded, it's always like that. You know, you really don't know what it's going to be, even though you have a very clear idea of what songs you're going to do and everything else, but you really don't know how it's going to come out.
Well, that's what, if you knew how it was going to come out,
yeah.
I mean, you could still do it, but it's, what's the point of doing it if you already know what's going to happen? That's my perspective.
Well, basically. And also, you know, there's something that happens, you know, when you're recording process. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's magic, sometimes there's not. And when there's not, you have to make magic.
Mm-hmm.
And you make magic by editing,
basically. Yeah.
By finding things that are magical and putting them together. How can I make this better? This recording sucks, but I need to make it good, you know?
So are you planning on recording with the orchestra in the near future?
I would love to. Well, we just recorded two music videos.
Mm-hmm.
We did two songs in my apartment, and we did it in a kind of a very low budget recording quality.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, we just used my untreated living room.
Mm-hmm.
We used four mics, five mics. We basically, I had the drums right inside of the piano because that's where we always play, and that's mm-hmm. where I like to be, right next to the drummer. So I had two stereo mics on the piano, and then I had basically two stereo mics set up for the violins, and then one designated mic for the cellist, and then I had a dynamic mic on a kick drum as mm-hmm. well. That was like below the piano. So we recorded two songs and we shot them, because I think today it's all about not the recording. Today it's all about the visual.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to put out music videos, because it's not enough for people just to listen.
Right.
People can listen to a podcast because they're driving in the car or mm-hmm. going for a jog. But when they sit at a computer or at their phone or on the can as they, you know, as they flip through Facebook, you got about 2 minutes, 1 minute to
right.
to keep someone's attention before it goes to the next thing.
Yeah.
And so, because you're always competing with Tinder, so we did two songs here. The sound quality is not at all what I want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was able to get it pretty. I was able to, you know, give it a little bit of magic, but it's nothing compared to what it needs to sound like. So we're gonna put those out right now. It's all about putting content out. But I would love to record with the orchestra. I would love to record with them the right way,
mm-hmm.
which means you need money.
Yeah.
You know, you need 20 grand or yeah. 30 grand to make it real.
Great.
To make it good.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Right now, I have a great team of people working with me. I have my business partner, Yermolai Romanov, mm-hmm. who is a young chap who is helping with branding and with social media and really just conceptually where everything can go and how we can make it happen. He did an amazing job putting together the website.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we have Nathalie Barremas, who is also become an active partner in this in the sketchy organization.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been amazing helping me keep the flame alive, because a lot of yeah. times I get so discouraged about doing this. No, it's true. It's very, very difficult, you know, dealing with her, and she helps me with getting rehearsals together, reaching out to string players and
yeah.
advertising and parts and everything else. So it's been incredible having a very strong team
mm-hmm.
of people around you who are dedicated, who really see the vision, and they want to see this happen.
Yeah.
So that's been a saving grace, I think, for me in terms of keeping this band alive, because it's really the most difficult thing in the world. It's so much easier for me to play just to play trio. Oh my God, you know, it's so easy and it's wonderful. So and this is a real challenge,
right?
But it's also, there are beautiful parts about it. Most of the outcome is beautiful, but it's quite challenging.
Yeah,
it's quite challenging.
So, April 22nd, God,
22nd.
That's tomorrow. That's really April 29th.
Eight and ten p.m.
8 and 10 p.m. at Zinc Bar.
Yeah.
May 16th. What time?
Doors open at 9:30. 10:30 show.
At Le Poisson Rouge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Down
on Bleecker.
Down on Bleecker.
Mm-hmm.
Misha, thank you so much for sitting down with me.
It's been a pleasure, Dan.
Really good.
Thank you for doing this.
Every time I feel you, I am reminded of what I have seen. 700 horses running bareback, running free. Every time I touch you, you leave a shimmer lingering on. Your lips are made of satin, oh, and your teeth taste of rum. Every time I hold you, I am reminded of heavenly love. Oh, my mama never told me that the world could be so rough. full of love. Don't judge me for my mind, 'cause I'm crazy and foolish and full of love. The other way of me, you steer clear. I cherish your existence. Now, baby, please don't disappear. Oh, baby, please. Baby, please. Baby, I need you here. Disappear. Don't go nowhere. I need you here. I need you. Baby, please. Baby, 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 baby. I need you here. Baby, please. Don't you disappear.
That might be the same.
Oh, play more?
Let me just mark that quickly that that's the take I liked in the previous one.